Welcome to Radio Naturopath, the call and talk show about health and natural medicine. It's September 4th, 2019. I am Fran Storch, ND, naturopathic physician, with my co-host Ron Meniza. If you'd like to participate in the conversation about natural medicine, you can email me at radionaturopath@gmail.com. You can also call us at 860-486-9487. That's 860-486-9487. If you'd like to listen to this show at another time, you can check out our podcast at whus.org. You can also check out my Facebook page, Twitter, and Instagram at Fran Storch, ND. All right. So I think the first thing we have to do is before we go on to talk about health in general is to just talk about what's going on in the world right now. And what's going on in the world right now is Dorian. So we've got this big hurricane that's really just decimated parts of the Bahamas. That the footage there is just horrific. That's just like half the Bahamas. It's something like half the homes in the Bahamas or half the homes in the areas that were hit are just down.
It's Category 5.
Yeah.
Or it was at that time. Now it's down to a 2.
But yeah.
Yeah, but it's, you know, and, you know, someone has never seen a Category 5 before.
Yeah, very, very strange.
Very strange.
But my hearts go out to the people in the Bahamas, and you know they've confirmed at least 7 deaths at this time, and the devastation is just horrific. And it's just this scary thing when you get to this time of year, you know, you have some days that are absolutely stunning and gorgeous, but you have in the back of your mind you have to worry about. We could get a catastrophic storm, and the catastrophic storms can happen down there, and they can happen here, you know.
And we get tornadoes. I mean, weather is weather. Weather is weather. There's nothing you can really, well, there is something you can do about it, but we didn't do it soon enough, so therefore we have weather.
It's going to get more and more dramatic, and you just never know when something bad is going to happen. And this time of year, I think what happens is you get the clash of warm and cool weather, and that's why you get these incredible storms. Of course, when they form in the tropics and then they come up north, the cold water up north takes the wind out of their sails. That's why after a while, when the water gets cold enough, we don't see them anymore.
Right, but this time of the year, the water is still pretty warm, and that's why we see more hurricanes this time of year than we do other times.
So it's just an amazing thing. I wish there was more I could do. There are places you can go that you can actually donate at this time, and there's relief efforts, and I just don't know. It's like after that happens, do you rebuild in something that's going to take a direct hit from something like that? And they are talking about that is something they talk about in Florida. Do you rebuild along the shoreline if there's devastation along the shoreline?
Well, that's a darn good question, because if the sea is going to be, you know, 6 or 8 feet taller and you're at sea level.
Yeah. Sea level change has changed.
You may be building, but you may be building on stilts if you're smart.
Right.
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 And you see that actually down Rhode Island. You see houses that are up on stilts.
Yeah.
You ever notice that?
Or just in case.
Yes.
Yeah. Different places.
Case. You never know.
Yeah, we saw them on Lake Champlain. I think I saw some, wherever I was riding this weekend, I think I saw some as well. Yeah, it's the footage is just amazing. Just, you know, just houses flooded out, houses having waves coming in. And it's just unbelievable. So my hearts go out to them. If you do want to donate, you can find charities where they are going to send money. To help the people of Dorian, there's places that you can. There's if you go to Charity Navigator, you're going to be able to find some organizations that are going to help you donate to them and see what relief efforts are available. So, yeah. So let's check with you, Ron. How's Lyme disease treating you?
You know, it's funny you should say that.
Yeah.
Okay, I guess. My energy level is definitely high again. I'm definitely back to that point where I'm feeling pretty good there.
That's great.
But of course, that was besides the Lyme. That was the other thing that's going on. But that's definitely there. My knee is still sore. Still hurts. Has good days, has bad days. My knee is like, I think that this is the way I will be living from this point on. I just can't seem to crack it. So,
well, again, we have to figure some stuff out. And I'm wondering once again, one of the things that I was thought about doing is getting you some topical silver.
Because I was drinking, you had a liquid silver that I was taking for,
but we might want to get some topical silver to put right over the, that you would massage into your knee, and it would be great. Once again, you know, you have the castor oil and you have the infrared heating pad. So, if we put some silver on there and some castor oil and the infrared heating pad, maybe it would get in. I'm just wondering if you still have some, do you have some microbes living in your knee, or do you just have some inflammation and, some inflammation and damage to the knee because of what the spirochetes did?
Well, that is a mystery. We don't really know. We never really will know. I mean, you can't
Can
you x-ray a knee and see spirochetes? I don't think so.
You can't see spirochetes, but you can see degeneration.
They x-rayed my knee looked great. They said it was architecturally perfect, is what
I was told. But they only did an x-ray. They didn't do an MRI.
They didn't do an MRI.
Right. So we don't know if there's soft tissue damage. And the thing is, if you think it's soft tissue damage, there's no harm in doing a trial of stuff to rebuild that knee. So the things you would consider are collagen, and you would also consider glucosamine. And mostly glucosamine, MSM, chondroitin, things like that. So you could start taking those and see if you get some relief. Because if you do, that means you have some damage degeneration to the cartilage, and that will help to rebuild the cartilage. I have some collagen. I'll just pull it out, and you can throw it into your. What are you drinking these days? I don't know if you would throw it in your coffee.
I drink coffee. I drink water.
Yeah. All right.
I drank too much water this morning.
Okay. Yeah. Thanks for sharing.
Yeah. Well, you know, I'm well hydrated. Let's put it that way.
Oh, good. That's great.
I do not suffer from dehydration much.
Yay. Well, that is good. You know, of course, you were diagnosed with hypothyroidism, and you had an issue where you had to adjust your dose, right? Because you had been initially started on 100 micrograms of levothyroxine, and then your T4, your TSH came back down to normal, which was exciting, but your T4 actually went up a little bit to the point that Dr. LaGuardia wanted you to cut back on the dose, and you actually had a restless night of sleep.
I did.
So we have to tweak your dose. That's not a bad thing. That means your thyroid's still working.
Right.
That's really good.
Well, that's
That's
a bonus.
So we'll back off on your dose, and we're going to have to dial in the right dose for you.
Yeah, and I took a day off of it. And then I
cut
one of the pills in half.
Okay. So and took the next day I you took a half pill?
I took a half pill the next day.
Very good. All right.
That seems okay. I mean, so far, it seems all right. I'm not like...
Then you're going to go back to hundreds?
I don't know. I had to talk to you and talk to Dr. LaGuardia about that. I mean, at this point, I'm down to the last of my 30 days worth of medication there. So I have to get a prescription renewal anyway, so I'm gonna call today and leave a message.
Yeah, and you could get hundreds and cut them up, or you could go down to there's 88 and there's 75, so you know, you don't have to take quite as much, and it's just, and again, one strategy is to, you know, if you go slightly hyperthyroid, then you skip a day or two.
Mm-hmm.
What Dr. LaGuardia wanted you to do is skip the weekends altogether,
right? But which is my most active time, which would be a little weird.
So skip
maybe
Tuesday and Wednesday.
I would skip like a weekday or two.
Right, sure. That
I could see that.
So we'd have to, you know, it's a combination of how are you feeling and what do your numbers say? So that's that's how we dial that in. How do you feel like your exercise performance is?
I feel great. I feel great.
Good. That's really good.
You know, I don't, I'm trying to think if I feel anything different. I don't feel like, you know, like a Superman or anything like that, but I certainly feel like I'm strong on my bike, and when I'm teaching class, I can maintain, you know, a fairly high-level wattage when I'm doing my intervals in
That's
the class,
good.
Which is good, you know, and higher than I was doing. You know, I was definitely getting to a point where I was just not able to get my wattage up that high.
That's good.
And I could get it up there, but it was just not, I mean, I was just like dying to do it.
Yeah.
And now I feel like, okay, I'm maintaining in the, well, basically, I can share this information. I'm maintaining in the low 200s as far as wattage without a lot of effort.
Yeah, that's good.
So I'm feeling pretty good on that. You know.
Low 200s on a Kaiser bike.
Right,
Which may or may not be accurate.
Which is basically what we're looking at is, you know, it's guesstimated wattage.
Yes.
It's
based on the gear that you're in and how fast you're pedaling. That's all it is.
Yeah. So it's
not based on.
But, you know, when I had, it seems like, who did I talk to that has a wattage meter and compared it? And they said it was within 10% or less.
Oh, that's not bad.
Accuracy. So the accuracy is actually really good to an actual wattage meter that you would have on a bicycle when you're out riding on the road. But again, you know, we don't even know how true to life those are.
Yeah.
They also may be somewhat virtual oriented.
Right.
It's hard to say.
Yeah. All right. So that's good. So this is really amazing because, you know, you had the diagnosis of Lyme, Babesia, and hypothyroidism. And again, we're going to see if your hypothyroid was a fluke, that it was just related to the Lyme. Because if your thyroid numbers start going off, like it may be that it was just because I'm not sure because you don't usually see that. You don't see somebody's thyroid go off because they have Lyme disease and then get better when they're done the Lyme disease. Usually if you're hypothyroid, you're hypothyroid. But it is quite possible that your dose is going to go down and there's a possibility. I'm excited to see if what will happen is, you know, you're not going to need the thyroid medicine, that it was just because of the Lyme directly. It seems, and that you had, what happened was you had a thyroiditis, you had a Lyme thyroiditis, that the Lyme attacked your thyroid. And that's why you had the elevated antibodies, and that's why it wasn't working. And if that's the case, once you're done your Lyme, you may come off the thyroid meds. I don't know.
I don't usually
hear of that happening, but we're going to see. If it turns out that you don't need your thyroid medicine anymore and your thyroid returns to normal, you will have had a Lyme thyroiditis, that the Lyme actually directly attacked your thyroid gland, made you hypothyroid, and then once you got rid of the Lyme, you're not hypothyroid anymore. So we're going to monitor the situation. Yeah.
Okay.
All right. Another situation we're monitoring is me and CBD.
Yeah. What's going on with that?
Good times.
You seem to be like not high times, good times.
Yes, no, it doesn't make you high. Sorry.
Right.
If you're looking for a buzz, go to Massachusetts.
Yeah.
By the way, did you know?
Or Maine, or you know, any of the other places that are now that accepting it?
Legal for adults.
Right.
But don't buy it and then drive into Connecticut because that's illegal. It's still illegal for recreational use in Connecticut. So don't do illegal things. All right. So
don't do crime things.
Don't do crime things.
Fran always says.
Yeah,
you're
going to go to Massachusetts, enjoy some THC, stay in Massachusetts, and don't come home with it. That's my warning to you, my caveat to you. Meanwhile, did you know that there's a medicinary, there's a cannabis medicinary in Willimantic?
In Willimantic now.
Yeah.
Yeah, I know there's one in stores.
Yes, there's one in stores, and there's also one in Willimantic now.
Where is it in Willimantic?
It's in that little plaza next to the Charter. To Charter.
Oh, over on West Main Street.
Yes, indeed. Yes.
There you go.
Yeah.
All right.
That's true. It's something Fethel. Fine Fethel Marijuana Dispensary.
Hmm.
And the one in stores is, I think, Nature's Medicine.
I think that's what it's called. Yeah.
I think so.
It's a thing. You know that in order to get, like, I was reading
Nature's
something.
Nature's Medicines,
I was reading something at Dr. LaGuardia's last time I was there.
Yes.
And it was how you get, you know, into that whole program. There's quite a little financial commitment to get involved in that.
Oh, there is?
You have to, in order to register for it, you have to pay out some money. I can't mention how much money,
no.
But you can pay out. You have to pay out, you know, we're talking in the hundreds of dollars to become, to actually be able to hold a card. You have to kick out, you know, that much money.
An amount of money. Will remain nameless.
Yes. But now you know what it is because I did the radio thing that no one can tell.
Okay.
Because we're on the radio.
Very good. Yeah. So what I have found with CBD, first of all, I think I'm sleeping a little bit better. And I have a mild problem with my sleep. You know what it is?
Where do I begin?
I'm looking at him.
Yeah.
Yes, because this one, no matter what you do to him, he's a little restless. And I do notice that when...
Maybe I should be taking CBD oil.
Maybe.
Maybe it'll make me less restless at night.
Yeah, that's a possibility. Because I do notice that when you get out of bed, the bed doesn't shake so much. I think you may wake me up a lot at night because you toss and turn. You're just a little restless. I mean, you're restless when you're sitting still. So I think you're a restless sleeper. So that's one thing. And then the other thing, of course, is I wake up hot.
Yeah.
And so I think that... So what I'm doing is I'm taking... Now, I need to... The caveat is that everybody's dose of CBD is going to be different. And you have to titrate in your own dose. But for me, at my size, it seems like 20 milligrams, but just a little over 20 milligrams, that's the magic dose for me. So, and it can be different brands. It can be different forms. Like I have a little bit of, I have some gummies and I have a couple of brands of gummies and then I have oil. And so I'll take a little bit of the oil because that'll give me, you know, 3, 4, 5 milligrams at a time. And then I'll take one of the gummies and I have gummies that are 10 and 20 milligrams. So I make sure I get 20 milligrams in. And the other thing, what's happening is I feel better on my bike. I feel like I'm recovering because the whole thing that Floyds of Leadville is saying is that you're going to recover better.
Really?
When you do CBD. And that I feel like that's happening, that I get on my bike and overall I'm feeling better. So, you know, I'm going to see what this does for me over time. Like this weekend, I didn't do a recovery day really. I just went out and rode without really thinking about it. You know, on Saturday I had that nice ride and I feel like I did well up in the Berkshires. And then the next day, I just rode up to Coventry and I climbed a bunch of hills. And then the next day we went on that interesting rail trail ride, which we can talk about.
We're going to talk about that actually.
Yeah.
I'm just working on that right now.
Right.
So,
and I felt pretty good. And then today I did my, you know, faster intervals. Cannot believe that we've been having rain every Wednesday afternoon. It's just amazing to me.
We feel very bad for Carrie right now.
Yeah,
if Carrie's listening, we feel really bad for you because it's just like every single... Carrie is our friend who organizes a Wednesday night bicycle ride, bicycle ride.
Yeah.
Been very successful. She's got a lot of people that come to it. It's very popular. And poor Carrie is... she's been rained out. How many weeks in a row now? It's been a lot.
I don't know if she... I don't know if... I don't know if she posted it for this week. I'm not sure what's going on there. Yeah, so
maybe she
I don't know how many
up.
Weeks. Yeah. Aww.
I hope not.
That would
I
be
hope
very
not.
Sad.
Yes, it would be sad.
Yeah. So, yeah, there is no, there's no Carrie ride listed for this week. I think she took it down. Yeah, that's too bad. All right. So anyway, the main thing I wanted to talk about, the main thing that I wanted to talk about today was fungus. And I wanted to talk about fungus, just fungus that you catch, not eating fungus, but which is also which
like
can
the
be
fungus
good for
among
you.
Us. Yeah.
Yeah. But I wanted to talk about, you know, when you is, you know, the fungal world interacts with our bodies and how it does that and stuff. So people come into me. I have candida. I definitely have candida. You sure you have candida? And, you know, why do you think you have candida? Well, I'm tired. When I spit, my spit is stringy. I have any myriad of complaints. I have brain fog. I'm tired. My bowels are not right. I have itchy skin. I have rashes. So there can be a lot of different things. The thing is, it's one of those things that can be a nebulous diagnosis that it can have a lot of different symptoms and it can look like a lot of different things. So systemic candidiasis, if you have really bad systemic candidiasis, you're probably really immunosuppressed. I mean, people who get that are people who take immunosuppressive drugs or on chemotherapy and like that. Now, some people will get lower levels of candida that bother them. So candida, what is candida anyway? Candida albicans and candida parapsilosis. There are several species of candida. There's candida albicans. There's candida parapsilosis. There's a number of candida species, and they are what you would call commensals. They live in our bodies. They live on our skin, and they live in our mucous membrane. So anything, any part of our body that's not sterile is going to have some yeast in it. And candida is a yeast. What is the definition of a yeast? A yeast is a one-celled organism that reproduces by budding. And budding means that, so you have your little yeast. So imagine that your little yeast is a little rod-shaped thing, right? And then it makes a little, a mini-me off of it. It starts out a tiny, tiny thing, and then it grows and grows and grows, and it jumps off. That's different from undergoing mitosis, where you replicate yourself and you split, and now you make a new cell that way. This by budding means you make a tiny version of yourself that grows, and when it gets to a certain size, it pops off. So you don't undergo mitosis. You make an offshoot of yourself. That's what a yeast is. It's a one-celled organism that reproduces by budding. It also makes spores. It can form mycelium to dig into, and hold on to cultures where it's sitting into your mucous membranes. So candida is a specific species of yeast. You know when you're in the shower and you haven't cleaned it for a while and you get like that red stuff that grows in your shower? You know what I'm talking about?
I do. Clean that.
You should clean it. It's Rhodoterula. It's another species of yeast. So the yeast that you use to make your bread rise is Saccharomyces. The Saccharomyces species are edible species. So Saccharomyces cerevisiae. So listen to the word cerevisiae. So those of you who speak Spanish, you know what does cerevisiae sound like? Sounds like cerveza. What's cerveza, Ron?
Beer.
Yeah. So Saccharomyces cerevisiae is Bruges yeast. Right? Mm-hmm. So it's edible. All right. That's Saccharomyces cerevisiae. Saccharomyces boulardii is that yeast I gave you when you had, when you're on the antibiotics. And we give it to you because it's a probiotic yeast. It's a yeast that you can eat that does wonderful things for your body. And also it's phagocytic, which means it will eat bad species of bacteria and yeast. So Saccharomyces boulardii is a yeast and it can crowd out bad yeast. So Candida species, they're what we call commensals. What a commensal is, it's something that lives in your body and it just hangs around there living there. It doesn't particularly do anything for you, but it feeds off the nutrients in your body. And then if the conditions are right, it can overgrow. So when it overgrows, you can get discharges. It can secrete compounds that are irritating. They can make you itch. They can give you rashes. And yeast will grow. It'll grow. It likes to grow in dark, warm, moist places, which is why women typically get vaginal yeast infections. You can get yeast infections in your digestive system. You can get them in your mouth. In your mouth, it's often called thrush. And, little babies will get them because they have developing immune systems. And people who are immunosuppressed will get them. And also, people can get them if you are using a steroid inhaler. So if you're using a steroid inhaler and you don't rinse your mouth of the steroid, steroids suppress the immune system so that the microorganisms that are fighting against the yeast in your mouth, they can't do their job. And so you're going to tend to get an overgrowth of yeast in your mouth. So if you are using a steroid inhaler, not an albuterol inhaler, albuterol inhaler is not a steroid. It's not an immunosuppressive. It's a bronchodilator. But a steroid inhaler, so if you're using fluticasone or mometasone, take a look at your steroid inhaler and see if it's got, the steroid inhalers that you're usually given are going to be mometasone, fluticasone, and sometimes budesonide. Those are all commonly given as oral steroids. If you're taking any of those, make sure if you're using it as an inhaler that you rinse your mouth out and gargle right after you take it, because you want it in your lungs. You don't want it in your mouth where you can get thrush. Unfortunately, when you take steroid inhalers, they do suppress your immune system in general, and you are more prone to getting fungal and other kinds of infections. So finding natural ways to get off your steroid inhalers is a good goal. Anyway, so is systemic candidiasis for real? So the So the answer is yes and no. I mean, again, if you're very immunosuppressed, you're more likely to get it. And then the other piece is that there are people who are genetically predisposed to getting dermatophytes and, you know, different fungal organisms, whether it's yeast infections or, you know, athlete's foot or, you know, toenail fungus. You know, fungus various places in the body. Some people have a nicer environment for fungus than others. Some people never get athlete's foot, and other people fight with it. And I'm one of those people that fight with it. And my dad did as well. So, you know, I probably have an inherited predisposition toward it. So if you, how do you know if you have it? Well, the thing is that there's a few ways you can, there are a few things you can do. One is that you can take a blood test and you can find out if you're making antibodies to Candida. And, you know, you can ask your doctor to test you for Candida, IgG, IgA, IgM, and see if you're making any antibodies. And if you are, that could mean that your body is actually seeing the Candida and fighting against it and sees it as inflammatory. Not everybody's body sees Candida as inflammatory. Like I said, it's a commensal, which means that it lives in your body. It doesn't do too much, but it can overgrow and become pathogenic. But it's not pathogenic in anybody. And I once heard a lecture where the lecturer said that you can have somebody with 1+ Candida. That means, you know, a small amount of Candida in their stool, and they have raging symptoms. And you can have somebody who has 4 times as much in their stool, and they have no symptoms at all.
Why is that?
Like I said, it's genetic. You have a genetic predisposition. It also depends on what else is going on. So if your microflora, if the rest of your microflora is keeping that Candida at bay and, you know, it's keeping it from doing anything, then you're not going to have symptoms. Also, if, you know, genetically, you have everybody's different antigens and different proteins in their bodies, and the fungus are going to be more attracted to some people's than others. That's going on. And the other thing is sugar and starch. Now, if you have a genetic predisposition and you eat a lot of sugar and starch, you're going to be more likely to get any kind of yeast infection or any kind of fungal infection, whether it's, you know, systemic candidiasis or, you know, bowel candida or vaginal candida or thrush or ringworm, you know, where you get, and a ringworm is not necessarily, it's not candida. What we call a dermatophyte. It's a fungus that grows in your skin, a tinea species. And so,
ew.
Oh, hush.
It all sounds very ew.
Thanks.
Should it or shouldn't it?
Yeah,
sounds
that's
kinda, like, you know, it's kind of a thing. It's kind of, you know.
So I'm just going to point out that when you're doing a medical show,
it's okay.
Not useful to say ew.
Ew, okay.
Yeah,
sorry.
Because there are people out there who have the conditions, and you're telling
understood.
Them, you're saying ew to them.
Oh, I'm sorry. I apologize.
Yeah. Okay. All right.
Yeah.
So, right. Anyway, so I'm finding, you know, I'm somebody who struggles with foot stuff. And I once went to the, and now there are those who say if you go to the nail salon, you're going to be more predisposed to it because they can only keep the nail salon so clean. Now, nail salons generally, they disinfect between every client, but maybe they can only do so much. And if you're predisposed to having fungus, you're going to be, that could be an issue. So you have to rethink whether you want to go to the nail salon. I will point out, if you like to have your nails done and you do have a fungus problem, you can get antifungal nail polish. That is a thing.
Huh.
Yeah. So that's kind of a cool thing that if you, cause you know, a lot of women, including me, like to have their nails done. But yeah, antifungal nail polish is a thing. And I've told, patients to go, to go get some if they want to. Yep. So if you go to myfootshop.com, you can get their medicated nail polish.
That's too
it's
funny.
It's really neat. Hmm. And it has...
Well, makes sense.
Yeah, it has tea tree oil. It's nail polish with tea tree oil in it. How cool is that?
That's cool.
Yeah. So if you have toenail fungus, and it comes in cute colors and everything. So so that's something you could... You could think of it. It comes in loose lips, pink ships. Yeah.
That's funny.
It comes in plant your sugar lips here, red.
Yeah.
It comes in I love you from my head, tomatoes.
Oh, my God.
Yeah.
Really?
Yeah.
Oh, my God.
Comes in Concrete Jungle.
All right.
Which is a
someone's
sort of a,
being
a
very, very clever.
It's great. It is clever.
Yeah.
Yeah. They have nice colors. They have Teal of the Century. They have Paint Me Now and Later. Pelican Peak Purple. Smoke Signal. Hickory Trickery. Good for Muffin. Isn't like Good for Nothing. Good for Muffin.
Mm-hmm.
Robin the Cradle, and it's Robin's Egg Blue. Then they have Shaken Not Stirred, and it's a teal. I don't know why the teal is Shaken Not Stirred. Royal Fool's Gold. This is really interesting. Very cute. So anyway, so that's something that can be of interest. All right. So anyway, so when if you are struggling with various kinds of fungus, whether you have so there's different things that you might be struggling with. If you find that when you eat too much starch and sugar, you get itchy, and you can get an itchy anus, you can get itchy in your sigmoid colon. You can find that your BMs itch you. You can find that you have red markings around your anus. You can also find that you have vaginal yeast infections if you're a woman. And you could get red rashes in your inguinal creases. In the inguinal creases, that's the creases between your thighs and your pelvis. You can get red rashes there that are from yeast. So those can all be candida. And so you can have a low grade or medium grade candida. If you are diabetic or have blood sugar regulation issues, you are going to be more predisposed to getting any kind of fungal rash because the higher your sugar levels overall, the more likely you are to get fungal rashes. And I'm a person who's predisposed to getting fungus. And I find that days that I eat more starch and sugar, I actually have more symptoms. And that the less starch and sugar I eat and the more fiber I eat and the more probiotic I eat, the better off I am. Now, the problem with your feet, the problem with feet is that they are in shoes all day. So if it's a time of year when it's just too cold for you to have exposed feet, or, you just have to be in shoes for work or whatever the condition is. It's very hard because the thing to do is to get your feet out of the socks and shoes. Being open to open air and letting them dry out, that's the best way to get rid of all kinds of fungus. So if you can spend the summer at a warm beach, that's the best thing because, when you have both toenail and foot fungus, if you walk in the salt water, walking along the water's edge is a great thing because you're getting exfoliated by the sand. You're getting antimicrobial activity from the salt, and you're also you're in the heat. And when you get out of the water, you have the sun. You also have heat and sun drying your feet. And so the sunlight is antimicrobial. Ultraviolet light is antimicrobial. So if you can spend time in the sun bare feet, that's really the best cure for athlete's foot and for toenail fungus. But given that you can't do that all the time, and in fact, I can't do it most of the time, then there's foot cream. And so there's different foot creams that you can do. And you can get, what you're going to put on your toenails may be different than what you put on your feet. And you can get non-drug foot creams, foot lotions that can help you to battle your fungus. You just have to be really diligent. The problem with foot fungus and toenail fungus is you have to be relentless. You have to like do it every day because the thing is you're putting your feet into the conditions every single day that make the condition worse. So you kind of have to be relentless about it. And so the first thing to do, if you're not able to go barefoot walking on the beach, the first thing to do is get a washcloth and wash your feet in the shower. And you might want to get some natural exfoliating shower cream. You can get, shower. They're not gels. They're more of a cream, the shower cream that has exfoliating particles in it. And of course, and get them from the health food store so that they're natural. Or you can make your own. But use a washcloth, put the exfoliating cream on, and scrub your feet. That's the first thing that you can do. If you could scrub your feet every day, scrub your feet and scrub between your toes, that's going to be the first thing that's going to help you because you're actually going to try to exfoliate some of the cells that are carrying fungus. And if you exfoliate them With something that has tea tree oil in it, even better. So then you're going to get some tea tree oil on it that, as you're scrubbing. So that's good. And if you don't have the tea tree oil in the scrub, that's okay because you can put the cream on later. So when you're done scrubbing your feet and your feet are nice and dry, that's when you want to put lotion on. And you can get different lotions. Just want to make sure your lotion doesn't have any yucky ingredients in it, that doesn't have mineral oil in it, that your lotion can have... tea tree oil is a big one. So tea tree oil topically can be very helpful. Not everybody can use tea tree oil. Some people are allergic to tea tree oil. And if that's you, then, of course, you have to find a lotion that doesn't have that in it. And the thing is, too, in terms of pharmaceuticals that are antifungal, especially topically, I am not opposed to them if you find that they work for you. The only issue with pharmaceuticals, if you use your tolnaphdate or your other topical antifungals, the only thing is because you're using one chemical to fight the infection, you can develop resistance. So when you're using a natural substance, there are so many constituents in it that you're unlikely to that you're unlikely to become resistant to it. So, like if you're putting garlic, for example, on your feet, if you're putting garlic on your feet, there's so many constituents in garlic that the fungus is not going to be able to develop resistance to it. So there are different antifungals that you can use topically. The ones you'll see in the drugstore, you're often going to see tolnaphdate. Tolnaphdate is a common one, and you can get that over the counter. You can get it. A store brand, and that comes that way. And then all the different things that end in conazole. You've got your ketoconazole and your miconazole and your econazole. Another common one you'll see in the drugstore is miconazole. And I think sometimes you'll see ketoconazole. Ketoconazole is what's in Nizoral. There's a foot cream, and there's also, it's also used for dandruff. So you'll see those. And then there's terbinafine. Terbinafine is what Lamisil is, and that's the one that people are often given orally for 6 months. It's a bit of a concern because it can irritate your liver. There are people who say, I took the Lamisil for 6 months and it worked. And so the concern there, of course, is that you're going to get some liver damage, but sometimes people do and sometimes people don't. So... I had a patient who had what appeared to be a fungal rash that we tried everything. We tried different creams. We tried tea tree oil. We tried all kinds of different things. And finally, that patient had a 6-month course of terbinafine, and it worked. And that person didn't have any bad side effects from it. And the nice thing is the fungal rash didn't come back. So I am not opposed to that if people don't have bad side effects from it. There's undecillinic acid that you can use as well. And undecillinic acid is relatively natural, and it comes in a number of different brands. It comes in sprays. And again, like I said, I'm more comfortable with the antifungal pharmaceuticals than I am pharmaceuticals topically than I am with them internally. But if you find one that works for you and it keeps your fungus away, I don't have a problem with that. I do find that if you are consistent with nice lotions that have tea tree oil in them, and if you get, brands that you get from the health food store, it can really keep your fungus at bay, but you have to be consistent with it. And so one way to do it is to put it on before you go to bed. And another way to do it is every time I put antifungal lotion on, every time I put on a pair of socks. So if I'm about to go on a bike ride, I'll definitely put some on because in the bike ride, I'm sweating and I'm sweating a lot. And I'm in shoes that I've worn a lot and sweat in a lot. So they're probably carrying fungus. And so the other thing is if you put antifungal stuff every time you put on your bike shoes, then you're going to transmit less fungus to the shoes. Everything's going to stay cleaner. And the socks that you're wearing are going to stay cleaner, even though, you know, presumably you wash your socks every time you wear them. You know, there's only so much that, you know, the spores aren't always going to get out from just from the detergent that you're using. So another good idea is if you have problems with ongoing fungus, you might want to throw a few drops of tea tree oil into your laundry every time you do your wash.
We had a caller in the midst of all that.
Okay.
If you wish to converse about that.
And were we talking about fungus?
I think you were still on the fungus thing, yeah.
No, I mean, was the caller?
No, actually, it was to in reference to, as Paul Willimantic was referencing the legalizing marijuana issue.
Oh.
And he wanted to bring about, felt that it was fairly important that, thank you for your call, Paul. You know, it's really important that we hear both sides of the argument as far as the dangers of marijuana. He's feeling that marijuana is dangerous and it should be pointed out, especially since we're on a college campus and there could be a lot of people influenced by this, that we maybe should talk about that a little bit. There's some research. I even actually have it right here from the Harvard Health Publishing, Harvard Medical School, about how marijuana is linked to high blood pressure risks. Obviously the psychotic effect and overconsumption and leading towards vomiting. I don't know anything about this, but
that's true.
He just thinks that we should probably talk about both sides of the argument.
Well, I don't know if it's a both sides thing. I think it's that like any substance, and we're talking any substance, we're talking magnesium, we're talking berberines, we're talking echinacea, we're talking pharmaceuticals, we're talking any substance at all, there's going to be side effects. Not everybody's going to be able to do it.
Correct. That's why a lot of drugs have all these warnings that come on them when you're listening to an ad on TV or whatever.
So if you want to talk about that side of it, when you compare cannabis, and I've said this many times, when you compare cannabis, which is not yet legal, so it's not yet legal for, you know, just adult recreational use in the state of Connecticut. So, by the way, remember, everybody, cannabis with THC is not legal for use in the state of Connecticut. So if you're holding it or you're buying it and bringing it from Massachusetts or you're buying it illegally, it's still illegal. So I can't condone it on the air, okay?
Right,
so
exactly.
If you're going to go do it, you go somewhere where it's legal and stay there and don't bring it back into the state because it's still illegal. And, you know, the fellow makes a good point about how there are questions about whether if you still have a growing brain, if it's a good idea to do cannabis with THC in it.
Or alcohol or anything, really.
But let's compare cannabis, which is not yet legal in the state of Connecticut, to opioids. And to opioids and to alcohol and to nicotine. Those three substances can kill you, and they are legal. They're not legal at certain ages, and you know opioids have to be prescribed, but it's legal in the state of Connecticut. You can't be arrested for having opioids on you. You can't be arrested for having alcohol on you unless you're underage, and nicotine as well. So those things can all kill you. You can ingest enough of those in a sitting to kill you. That is not true of cannabis. All right.
He's claiming it is, but that's that there's some research out there that if you were to increase the blood pressure, the person could therefore have an
if a person has a side effect of hypertension and you raise their blood pressure enough, they could have a stroke and die. That's true.
Sure.
But most people don't have that side effect. It's not like there are two equal sides, the good side and the bad side. I think overall, cannabis as a compound is relatively safe. It's much safer overall than alcohol, alcohol, nicotine, and opioids. But it definitely, you know, everybody's genetically different. So, for example, if you have a COMT anomaly, where there's a certain COMT anomaly, a COMT is catechol-O-methyltransferase. So it's an enzyme that breaks down your catecholamines. Catecholamines being there are certain neurotransmitters, dopamine, epinephrine, norepinephrine. They're broken down by this enzyme called catechol-O-methyltransferase. And people can have anomalies in that enzyme. And if you have the AG anomaly, so it's just a certain kind of conformation of the gene. I don't want to get into it too much. But if you have that conformation, cannabis may not be for you. So there are ways to find that out, and I can explain them. If you if you can get a genetic test and find out what your COMT situation is, and you have to talk to a doctor about that, about getting that genetic test. If you have that kind of COMT anomaly, you could have negative effects to cannabis.
You were just talking about this the other day.
So and you have to remember that that THC is not CBD. CBD doesn't affect you the same way that THC does, and it's CBD is not going to make you high, and it's really generally safe, and that's why it's legal and over the counter now in Connecticut, but it's CBD without THC. So like any substance, you have to be aware of whether it's something that negatively affects you. And, you know, the point made that we're on a college campus here, we have young people who are younger who, you know, they show up here and they're 18 years, they can be 18, 17, 18 years old. So their frontal lobes are still developing. So could cannabis with THC be contraindicated for them? That's a good question. That's something that, you know, and again, once they're of age, that's a decision that they can make. So you definitely want to be considering those things and consider whether you want to use cannabis recreationally. And if you do, how often you want to use it. If you find you're using it every day recreationally, there may be another issue. On the other hand, if you're using cannabis because you have severe anxiety and it's working for you, I don't see a problem with that. But you do have to consider when you are, you know, in your late teens, early 20s, and your brain is still developing, is it a good idea to do cannabis all the time? That is a very good question. But the thing is, there are so many things that cannabis can help, and it's relatively safe, so much safer than so many other things that are out there. And there are things that, and the thing is that CBD can do a lot of that work. The CBD is a great anti-inflammatory, and it definitely helps with anxiety and depression. And the big thing that it helps with is inflammation, but it also hits your anandamide receptors, so it makes you happier. And so it's not, I mean, it may to an extent be making you have more of an endorphin experience, but it's the anandamide receptor that it's going for. So it's not addictive, and it's not, you know, it's not going to bring you to respiratory failure. Let's be clear here that you drink enough alcohol, you will have a seizure and die. You ingest enough opioid, you will have respiratory failure and die. If you ingest enough nicotine in a sitting, which is hard to do when you're smoking cigarettes, you're not, the problem there is not the nicotine. It's the
carryover. Yeah.
Yes, it's the cardiovascular and the, but pure nicotine, if you were to ingest pure nicotine, it would kill you in an instant. It's a poison. You know, it's a neurologic, it's a neurotoxin. So, CBD and THC are not neurotoxins. However, I agree that THC is not for everybody. I'm not clear that THC is for me even. However, I'm a person that THC is not for me, but CBD is. So that's kind of interesting. So, you know, an interesting point has been made. All right. So, So let's talk a little bit about, let's wrap up the whole antifungal question. There are foods you can eat that are going to reduce the fungus in your body, whether it's candida or on your feet, like garlic, oregano, tea tree oil, which you can ingest some, and then just eating fiber in general. Chia and flax seeds will help to sweep out extra microorganisms that are not doing you good, and they will also provide a substrate for healthy microorganisms, so healthy probiotics in your digestive system. There are supplements that we use. We use monolaurin, which is extract of coconut oil. Coconut oil itself is antifungal. Oregano oil killed, you know, it's one of those keep agents, kills everything except people, right? So oregano oil is like that. Grapefruit seed oil is kind of like that too. Because we give oregano oil for Lyme disease, and we give it for it's fungal and antiviral, all kinds of good stuff. Grapefruit seed extract as well kills a lot of different things. Usnea, you know what usnea is? Usnea is old man's beard, and it's a lichen. I'm liking it. It's a lichen, and it looks like a beard, and it's this beautiful pale. I want to say it's not translucent, but it gives off light. It's almost iridescent when you see it growing. And you don't see it as much on this coast, but I think you do. I think you see it a little bit further north. We see a lot of it in Oregon, and the way you identify it is you take a strand of it and you pull it, and it has a covering, and there's an elastic stringy thing inside. So that's Usnea, and you can make a tincture out of that with alcohol, and it's a wonderful antifungal. Organic apple cider vinegar. It has probiotics in it that are going to fight with and compounds that are going to be antifungal. You can use it topically. You can take it internally. Aloe as well. We already said coconut. Turmeric can also be antifungal. And licorice as well. So licorice you have to be careful with. If you do real licorice and you have blood pressure issues, it can raise your blood pressure. So you have to be careful of that. Lemongrass as well. So you can get combinations of these things or take them singly. There are special probiotics that you can take orally that will keep women out of yeast infections. And they have specific species in them that fight against fungus. So the latest combination has the following species. It's Lactobacillus crispatus, Lactobacillus gesseri, Lactobacillus jensenii, and Lactobacillus rhamnosus. So so when you see that combination in a women's probiotic, those are the probiotics that have been seen in women who have less incidence of yeast infection. So they've put them together in their various products you can get that have those four in them. There's also Lactobacillus rhamnosus GG, which you can get these little pearls that have that in it, and that can help to keep fungus at bay. Anyway, then there's a new antifungal called Horopito, and there are some compounds, and there's creams, and you can take orally of this neat herb. It's a herb from New Zealand called Horopito, and there are companies that provide that, and that can be a good antifungal as well. All right. So we did a little more discussion of fungus. I will point out once again that if you really want to reduce your fungal load, that looking at your consumption of starch and sugar can really help, as well as alcohol. And so all of those can be helpful. All right, so we had a good discussion about fungus and CBD and cannabis and Ron and his issues. So we're going to go now.
My issues.
Yes, your issues. Mm. So you have been listening to 91.7 FM, WHUS Stores. I am Fran Storch, and you have been listening to Radio Naturopath, the call-in talk show about health and natural medicine. I've been on with my co-host, Raman Izza. You can email me with questions and comments at radionaturopath@gmail.com. If you'd like to listen to this show at another time, you can check out our podcast at whus.org. You can also leave questions or comments at my Facebook page, Twitter, and Instagram, at Fran Storch ND. Thank you for listening to Radio Naturopath, your show where you can learn about the best of science and nature. We'll be back with more Radio Naturopath next week at 91.7 FM, WHUS Stores.